Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight we have with us Dr. Ronald Wheeler of the Diagnostic Center for Disease in Florida, and we're going to talk about his cutting-edge work with prostate cancer. How are you, Dr. Wheeler?
Eva, I'm just fine tonight. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So first of all, before we even get started, tell us a little bit about you, where your center is, and where people can find you.
Well, I am the medical director of the Diagnostic Center for Disease in Sarasota, Florida. I am a urologist and am intensely interested in prostate cancer. In fact, all that we do at this center is prostate cancer evaluation, diagnostics, treatment, and follow-up. I basically am involved with all phases of prostate disease that inevitably leads to prostate cancer. Our center has been in existence for over a year and a half. I'm a urologist of more than 22 years.
So, and do you have a website people can find?
I do. Our website is www.MRISUSA.com.
Now, what is so special about the way you treat prostate? Well, let's first of all, the way you diagnose it.
Well, I think there's multiple things that allow me to be different, and clearly I am different than mainstream urology. Typically, urologists, when they see a PSA, which is prostate-specific antigen blood test, that is extremely common to all men. But I would typically have a fellow who has an elevated PSA, say, of 1 to 4, or from 4 to 10, I would evaluate that individual primarily for prostatitis. Most physicians, urologists specifically, when the PSA reaches 2.5 or above, would consider doing a biopsy right away on those individuals. Well, we have a problem with that here because biopsies spread cancer cells when they're encountered, and that's not a good thing to do because, in effect, what we do, if that were to happen, is to spread cancer cells beyond the capsule of the prostate, making the stage of the disease worse than it initially was. In addition to that, we believe, or I believe specifically, that prostatitis, being the number one reason that PSA elevates, deserves an opportunity to be treated and thereby help some patients, in fact many men, avoid a biopsy altogether. I think finally, in regard to our diagnostics, we have a technique here called MRI, which is magnetic resonance imaging, spectroscopy, and this is a 3.0 Tesla magnet, which is the strongest, most sophisticated diagnostic magnet in the industry, frankly, available to medicine today. Currently used significantly with breast cancer and increasingly so with prostate cancer based on our work here in Sarasota. We have excellent results with this. Bottom line is, it helps us understand who has prostate cancer, where the prostate cancer is located, so that we can do targeted biopsies, because we understand that doing lots of biopsies ultimately stimulate cancer to grow.
That was going to be my question. When you do a needle biopsy, how does, well, does that contribute to the spreading of cancer if it's there?
Absolutely it does, and the reason it does, it's a simpler concept to visualize as sticking your fingertip with a needle. And when you do that, it's obvious that blood comes out when you've hit your fingertip. Given that, similarly, any organ that is punctured by any needle, whether it's a small stick pin or whether it's a formal biopsy needle, will cause a significant bleeding. Well, what that bleeding means is that really hundreds of thousands of cells are escaping the prostate capsule when biopsy is done, and if cancer cells are encountered with that biopsy needle, there's no doubt that cancer cells will spread beyond the capsule of the prostate. We have documentation of that. It was published in the Journal of Urology in 2002. There's a very interesting case that was written up in that journal from the University of California at San Francisco that showed that prostate cancer was actually growing into the rectal wall 3.5 years following a prostate biopsy.
Wow. I want to ask the obvious, but I know it's so obvious, then why do they do such radical treatments that it, I guess it's a job to make money too, right?
You know, I have mixed signals on that. I think when you take a look at a patient with problems, I want to try to figure out what it is that's going on. So a little bit like Sherlock Holmes, and then really like Dr. Watson, come back then with all the information in hand. I want to subsequently be able to treat that patient in as kind of fashion as I can, doing for the disease what is required and nothing more.
Have you connected that there's any specific diet-related problem or any specific emotion-related problem that contributes to prostate cancer?
I think when you talk about diet, it's a little bit of a loaded deck, but I will tell you that it's my experience that the best diet that you eat, which I believe to be the modified Mediterranean diet, eliminating red meat and dairy fats from your diet primarily, basically enables an individual to at least maintain stability of disease. When you eat whatever you want to eat, including fried foods and junk foods and so forth, those food groups specifically will antagonize the cancer process and actually cause it to become more aggressive.
What about emotions? Like many women, and you may not be prepared for this one, but you know, many women who have been sexually molested get breast cancer. What about men and prostate cancer?
You know, I don't know the specific answer to that because I don't believe it's been well studied. But there's zero doubt in my mind that stress plays a significant role in the development or evolution of disease. And those stresses come to us from multiple areas, and certainly one of them would be the psychological effects of, being molested, as an example.
Okay. How would someone know if they're getting the first stages of prostate? Well, first of all, does prostatitis turn into prostate cancer?
The American Association of Cancer Research, which is a very sophisticated group of geneticists and microbiologists, primarily out of Johns Hopkins, have demonstrated very eloquently that prostatitis, which is a non-bacterial inflammatory condition of the prostate, does in fact evolve into prostate cancer. So this is really the reason why we focus on or center our attention on dealing with prostatitis primarily. And the bottom line here is, Eva, that we want to treat disease that needs to be treated, but we know that there are cancers out there that do not need to be treated. So I'm very cautious to try to identify those diseases or those cancers that need to be treated while leaving others alone, if you will.
And how accurate is prostate detection?
Well, that's a great question. Currently, the state of the art, if you will, in quotes, would be a random series of biopsies, anywhere from 6 to 60 biopsies that are actually just put into the prostate under ultrasound guidance. This is a real hit-and-miss proposition, and obviously not very accurate. But nonetheless, it would take 10 men who have a PSA, say, of 4 to 10, all of those guys being equally consistent with the possibility of having prostate cancer. All 10 of those men would have to have a biopsy so that we could find 2 or 3 men with cancer. So you can see that it's not a very sophisticated process. To be honest, and in a word, it's crude. It's just really not the type of procedure that we want to be doing in the year 2008. We do have imaging. Urologists are reluctant or reticent to jump on board with imaging because they don't understand it. They don't know about it. In my world, I have to know about it because I don't like failure, and I, again, want to try to do for my brother the best that I can for him and what's required while doing nothing excessive.
So by doing the imaging, it gives you a greater degree of accuracy, which saves someone from having the radical surgery?
Well, by doing the first, there's two things here. By doing the limited biopsies or targeted biopsies, we're finding the disease in many, many more cases than we would find with a routine randomized biopsy session. We have been able to show using our MRIS that we are 80% accurate in predicting and confirming the presence of prostate cancer. The importance of the scan is for us to determine yes or no, is the cancer outside of the gland, so is it outside of the capsule, or is it in the seminal vesicles or even into the lymph nodes? We're able to tell that by the MRI spectroscopy scan.
What are the first symptoms that someone needs to look for so they know they need to come and see you?
You know, there's an irony here. Actually, prostate cancer is a disease of healthy men. So unless men actually go and get a PSA, and I recommend it starting at age 30, based on the fact that 30% of 30-year-old men have prostate cancer. So the bottom line is that we want these individuals to come in and get a PSA blood test. Again, prostate-specific antigen. We ask our adult men not to have any sexual activity 48 hours prior to the blood test so that we can ensure accuracy of the test. And with that PSA result, we are able to predict what that person's condition is as related to the prostate. If the PSA is 1 or higher, data that I presented at the NIH, National Institutes of Health, back in 2000, demonstrate that those individuals have prostatitis. Again, we're back to prostatitis as an evolutionary disease to prostate cancer. So healthy men must get their PSAs checked. They must do that because they'll never have a clue. I have to just mention a quick case of a fellow who was 44 years old and felt super. He basically built pool cages for families and houses that had pools. And he's got 6 kids. His dad had prostate cancer and was basically living with this disease in his 80s. When he was 44 years old, this fellow, and this is about 6 months ago, he went and had his very first PSA just because he thought that it was the right thing to do. His very first PSA was 36.
Wow.
36, we basically convinced him not to have a biopsy done. He had the MRIS done. The MRIS showed us that he had cancer all over his prostate and beyond his prostate capsule into the seminal vesicles.
Wow. Did he not have any change in his urine flow or anything?
No change at all in his urine flow, nothing at all. And that's what's so surprising. Again, this is a disease process that some men will have a signal such as what you just mentioned regarding urinary difficulties, but most men have no difficulties whatsoever, and they actually feel very, very well. So men must be compelled to go and get this done, very similar to one getting a cholesterol check routinely, or having their blood pressure checked once in a while, or possibly getting their eyes checked once in a while. This is just one of those things that if you get it at age 30 and your PSA is less than 0.5, I would leave you alone for a couple of years. Excuse me. But if your PSA is 1 or higher, I would want you to monitor that PSA more carefully.
Let's talk just a minute about, you know, my friend, Michael.
Yeah.
From what I understand, I didn't get to talk to him today or this weekend like we had planned. I don't know where he was. I couldn't reach him. His cell phone has funny signal up in the mountains. But I know that when he first came to see you that he had some pretty serious prostate issues, and I don't know what you did, but within 6 months, they were all gone. And he's not really sure if it was diet or if it was that treatment, but I'd like for you to tell the audience about that because this man was worried about dying.
Well, his PSA at one time was 10.5. And I know that, his prostatitis is going to play a role in every male with a PSA of that level. And again, when it's 1 or higher, prostatitis is equally going to play a role. But as we go along, our prostates, as we grow older, I should say, our prostates begin to grow, starting at about age 45, and they continue growing throughout our lifetime. Similarly, prostatitis continues as well. So from my perspective, when I look at an individual, while we're looking for areas that are suspicious or we're looking for issues where the problems exist, in your friend's case, we know that he has a diseased prostate. We know that anytime someone has a PSA of 1.0 or higher, that individual has a diseased prostate. So knowing that, we, you know, at that point, we want to pay attention to diet. We do want to pay attention to proper nutrition or appropriate nutrition. That's critical. Things like fish oil, obviously our peanuts formula for prostatitis. And as you know, it's PWENUTS. And we have a website by the same name. The point of all this is vitamin D3 is another product that makes sense. It's a vitamin, and vitamins do make sense. We want people to do green tea extract, because green tea has been shown to be a absolutely wonderful antioxidant, and through polyphenols, which are the active ingredients in green tea, the bottom line is these individuals are able to actually improve their health, and sometimes dramatically, such as you're noting with your friend.
Do you recommend, what other kind of supplements do you recommend?
Beyond the ones that I mentioned, I actually try to limit the supplements that I give to people, and the reasons are multiple, but one of them is there was a study that was actually published in the, I believe it was the New England Journal of Medicine, that actually showed that people that supplemented on a regular basis, and most of those individuals were over-supplementing, those individuals actually would ultimately get a more aggressive cancer when cancer was diagnosed. So that's pretty scary. And I think in the bigger picture, we all know that vitamins and minerals can be toxic at certain levels. So I'm often aware of that, and I want people to find those ingredients that make sense, but be wary of those that are controversial. And I know that you're aware that we have some controversial things that I recommend that people avoid, and the reasons are simple. It doesn't mean that what we're asking them to avoid may not be a benefit, but when there's information, and probably equal information, or even overwhelming information, that suggests that some of these nutrients that they take are not healthy, especially for prostate disease, then in those cases, we want those individuals to stop those controversial ingredients, such as lycopene, coenzyme Q10, chondroitin. Flax is another, and beta carotene is yet a fifth.
That's interesting. So a lot. What does CoQ10 have to do with it?
Well, CoQ10 was studied by William Fair, former chairman of the Departments of Urology and Surgery at Memorial Sloan Kettering. And prior to Dr. Fair's untimely death from colon cancer, he was able to study coenzyme Q10 in the laboratory and basically created a broth of CoQ10 and put it in these little dishes called Petri dishes, and went back into his cell bank and brought out known cancer cells. These are hormone-sensitive cells and hormone-insensitive cells, and he knew the exact count of cells that he put on these auger plates of CoQ10, and bottom line was he put the lids on them and monitored these growth plates over time. He didn't know whether prostate cancer cells would just sit there. He didn't know whether they would die or would they grow. Excuse me. What he found was is that they grew wildly in the presence of coenzyme Q10.
Interesting. And that's all he put in there. Did a pharmaceutical fund that?
No.
Interesting.
No.
So tell us about hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. Are there more than one kinds of prostate cancers?
Yeah, there are actually two basic kinds of prostate cancer, keeping it simple. Cancers are graded differently, but there's two basic kinds. One is hormone-sensitive, which means that if we pulled away a male's hormones, that we can get that cancer to respond. The other is hormone-insensitive cancer, which is basically a cancer that will grow irrespective of what is being done for that individual. All men with prostate cancer start out with hormone-sensitive disease. that's the dominant disease. How long that remains dominant varies from patient to patient, and oftentimes alters our treatment course.
So how would you, do you treat the two differently?
Yes, you would treat them both totally differently. You know, as an example, you know, we're in an anti-aging world these days with everyone wanting to look younger, act younger, sound younger, and perform like they were a teenager. And in the male world, it's just a common thread of influence that basically tells us that we want to be all those things. In other words, we want to be all that we can be. In the process of all that, we supplement with testosterone frequently. As we use this testosterone, one of the quickest ways to diagnose the presence of prostate cancer is to use a hormone supplementation or replacement like testosterone. When the PSA rises, the PSA is rising in concert with an aggravation of disease or an intensification of disease. So in this case, prostate cancer is getting worse. Prostate cancer is growing. When you pull the hormone replacement or supplementation away, and the same would go for growth hormone and its precursors. So when you pull those away, typically the PSA will drop back down, PSA being a marker of disease activity. So you pull those things away, PSA drops. And then when you challenge the body again with another course of supplementation, the bottom line is, the PSA would go back up again. We've had excellent results taking those individuals and looking at them very carefully with MRI spectroscopy and finding those cancers that are causing the PSA to rise rapidly.
I have two questions now. One of them, I don't want you to let me forget, so I want to ask about the how early can that machine... What is it called? It's called the Tesla spectroscopy.
Right, it's a 3.0. It's a 3.0 Tesla magnetic resonance imaging spectroscopy scanner.
And
it's got other letters and numbers that go with it, but essentially that's what it is. And again, it is the most sophisticated scanner or imager in the world. Obviously, people use it for brain cancers and some very, very delicate work.
Is this available at most clinics?
Actually, it's not. We are the most prolific prostate center in the world. We've done more scans in the last year and a half than most other centers have performed in probably 10 years.
Okay.
So we are the only one that actually combines a urologist, myself, and this scanning technology in one center. So we're the only one that does that. There are other centers scattered around the country that occasionally will do a prostate here and do a prostate there. Sloan Kettering in New York, they do some prostate scanning. University of California in San Francisco also does some scanning, as well as MD Anderson in Houston. But others are really just trying to get on board, and currently the marketplace is really devoid of excellence in the MR and clinical combination world.
So what would a typical protocol be with you? I mean, when someone, if someone says in New York and they want to see you and they don't, they just have prostatitis, what would happen? How many times do they have to come and see you? How long would it take before they could see you?
Well,
what would you try to begin with to get it to go away?
Typically, what we would do is see that individual the first time, and likely that would be the only time that I would need to see that individual for a year or more. What I try to do is limit the number of visits that somebody has to see me. One, we're very comprehensive in our approach, and actually we have a very inexpensive type of exam called the corporate exam that allows people to see us for $525, as example. So that's a very inexpensive way to see me. We see patients on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday using that model. People could call in, and typically I'm about 3 to 4 weeks out for an appointment. Similarly, our MRI spectroscopy scanner, which is indicated for all men that have had biopsies and negative biopsies or prostate cancer diagnosed and want to know what procedure is next to do, that scanner would then come into play. So in the bigger picture, what I would do with those individuals for prostatitis, as an example, I would evaluate that patient with an EPS. And what that is the expressed prostatic secretion, and this is a procedure that is done at the time of the prostate examination, whereby I put a little bit of pressure on the prostate, akin to something like a prostate massage. I put moderate pressure on the prostate, and the prostate, being a lubricating gland, actually gives up some of that lubricant, if you will, and that drips out of the tip of the urethra. We capture that on a slide, and we look at that under the microscope. If someone has 10 or more white blood cells per 400 power or 400x of the microscope, that's consistent with the diagnosis of prostatitis. That individual, assuming there's no lumps or bumps on the prostate that bother me, and assuming the PSA is relatively low, and I would say relatively low for me is 5 or under, that individual would then go on our peanuts formula, and we would also visit with them about all other facets of our chronic disease management approach, which we talked a little bit about, which is diet, nutrition, exercise, stress reduction, and education. And we have various components underneath of that, which basically attack cancer cells, or better stated, are very protective against prostate cancer growth. So we're really trying to make that individual healthier so that that individual never evolves into prostate cancer. It's interesting, but we believe that the peanuts formula, which we have patented all over the world, can actually prevent prostate cancer. You know, there are many reasons for us to think that, but one is a study that I published in a peer-reviewed journal last year, and specifically what we showed is that when we took men with known prostate cancer and treated them with diet and nutrition, and the nutrition was our peanuts prostate formula, these men all decreased their PSAs by an excess of 50%.
Is this available to anyone, whether they come and see you or not?
Absolutely. They can just get on online with www.peanuts.com.
And what's in it that makes you...
You know, that's another very interesting question. It's a blend of 15 vitamins, minerals, herbs, and amino acids. And, you know, people often ask me why I came up with it or how I came up with it. And I told them that, or I tell everyone really, that I came up with it out of desperation, out of need. I was willing to spend a lot of money to get this product made, to take a look at this, to try anything I could to help men with prostatitis symptoms, which are some of the toughest symptoms when you have those disease symptoms that any male could ever get with any disease. So in the process of all this, we put all these ingredients together. In fact, I tell people that I put everything in there but the kitchen sink. And in the process, again, I did not know whether I had a formula that could be patented or not. And based on all of my research, ultimately it turned out that nobody else had this formula, so it was unique to us. And, it's got many things in it that people know, zinc, PyGM, some salt palmetto is in there. But it's all the other ingredients that we put in there with the amino acids that really makes a difference to the formula. And basically what it does, it has been proven, so we've got scientific data that know that this will actually decrease inflammation in the prostate. So whatever the white cell number is in the prostate secretion, over time, this formula will take that down and resolve prostatitis in the vast majority of patients. And, you know, you would probably ask next, well, if it's good for the prostate, wouldn't it be good for the entire body? And the answer is obviously yes. We just are looking at the prostate and what this formula does at the level of the prostate to try to make a difference.
I hear a lot about salt palmetto and prostate. What is it that it does exactly?
Well, salt palmetto is a beta-sistosterol, And bottom line is that salt palmetto by itself is not really the product or ingredient that really people find to be of significant benefit. It's got a lot of folklore to it. The reason it's in our formula is because of that folklore, and it's also not problematic, so people can take it with confidence. It's not toxic, or it's not going to harm them if they take it. But the rigorous scientific studies have shown that salt palmetto does not lower the PSA and really works very average in terms of improving urinary symptoms, very similar to what a sugar pill would do as an example. But, you know, other products that are beta cystosterols are things like PyGM and nettle, and those products typically, beta cytosterol or beta cystosterol is yet another that's available, and all of these are supposed to improve prostate health. But my position, when we say they improve prostate health, I'd like to know a little bit more about what they do. I just don't want people saying, well, you know, I feel better, I think I'm emptying my bladder better, and while those things are good, I'm just trying to verify that there's something more to it than just that. Because, as you know, it just the mere mention of improving urinary symptoms could have a placebo effect on many men that take that, those kind of products.
Does it, I lost my train of thought. Well, let's talk for a minute. Oh, do you use enzymes in any of your products?
Well, we have amino acids. Yeah, and amino acids are enzymes. We have the some of those in our formula, but I don't typically go out of my way to find other enzymes or amino acids that I try to give to people. Again, I try to find things that I know work, and I try to stick to the script, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that other things could not be found and be proven to be a benefit, but I think we have to, especially when you sell people something, you know, the last thing I want to do is sell something to someone that doesn't work and reap a profit for something that has no value at all. I just, part of me being a human being and part of me being a doctor says that you can't do that stuff.
Okay, two questions. I don't want to, I'm almost forgetting this one question. Hormones. Does it matter if you use natural or pharmaceutical hormones when you treat them with testosterone, or however it is you treat them?
Well, I think if you're treating somebody naturally, I'm aware of things like DHEA as an example. Other products, progesterone as an example, which can be manufactured outside of the manufacturing world. These types of products, in my opinion, rather than taking a precursor to testosterone, like wild yam as an example, I would recommend that people use the actual product itself. Testosterone, while it's not inexpensive, it's not terribly expensive, and I think the real point of that is that you want efficacy with the product that you're using. You want to see results. You don't want to be taking something that has so little benefit and have to take so much of it to get a benefit that it actually kind of defeats the purpose of what you're doing.
I have a question here. When you say use the product itself, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, as an example, Androgel, as an example, is a product, testosterone supplementation product. So it's a manufactured product. It's manufactured to certain specifications. It does have FDA approval and is under the scrutiny of the FDA. I think in times when people use things like this, medications, as example that they pick on to utilize, I think that people need to have the confidence that what they're taking actually works. There are a lot of people that experiment with this, that, or the other. I frankly don't agree with all of that. I want people to do what's right and do whatever it is you want to do, you can achieve. But I think that you have to be careful about how you do it and what other diseases are you going to possibly enhance by using whatever technique or product you're using.
Do they have? Does the manufactured products have side effects?
Well, that's a great question. Most products do have side effects. In the case of Androgel or something along those lines, in a testosterone supplementation product, that really doesn't have a lot of side effects. But when you take other medications, side effects are extremely common. Even something like Avodart, which is a product that shrinks the size of the prostate by 20 to 30%, you know, at 6 months, this product causes breast tenderness. It can cause sexual dysfunction. While those two specific areas of side effects are minimized because at a year, basically those side effects are equivalent to that of a placebo. But nonetheless, men are sensitive to these types of things, and all men should understand that with any drug that you take, that there is a side effect profile that comes with it, and you have to be prepared to accept that when you take that particular drug. But again, this is the reason that I don't prescribe drugs unless I have no alternative and I need a specific action out of a specific drug to help that individual.
Do the manufactured ones have any steroidal connections? I don't know how to ask that properly.
Well, I think when you're talking hormones, pretty much all hormones come from cholesterol, which is a sterol. And so, you know, I don't believe that the intent is to put sterols into products, and there's certainly steroids per se are not part of products that people take.
Okay. Have you had to deal with this yourself?
You know, from my standpoint, I'm in my mid-50s, and my PSA is less than 0.1. I would challenge anyone that listens to your program that has a prostate to match me. What I can achieve, what I attribute my success to is the peanuts formula. That's the only thing that I do. I don't take anything beyond that. You know, virility is not an issue. Strength is not an issue. You know, I think I'm aging gracefully. I'm as strong as an ox, really. But the neat thing about this is I'm leading by example. So, you know, many times doctors have the diseases that they're trying to help their patients with, and
right,
they can't get their own disease under control, so they're not really great role models. You know, in my world, I'm just trying to do all I can to show that we can prevent this disease if we can get a little bit of stimulus behind this effort to make it happen. I've written a protocol for a study that will allow us to compare this product, peanuts, to a placebo in a randomized, double-blind, age-matched study. And I'm positive that we will succeed in preventing prostate cancer. What I don't know is what the cut point is above which I can't prevent it. I just don't know that. But minimally, we had a fellow as an example that we're quite concerned about, 68-year-old gentleman. His PSA was 33. And we were extremely concerned that he had prostate cancer. And lo and behold, he did have prostatitis, because every male with a PSA of 1 or higher has prostatitis. So in the process, we put him on our peanuts formula. We scanned him. He had no evidence of prostate cancer. Inside of a year, his PSA is 2.
That's really amazing.
But,
I'm sorry?
Yeah, we were equally amazed, but I've seen stories like that happen intermittently.
It sounds to me that, you know, most people that start having prostate issues, the first thing they think about is impotence, and they probably don't come to the doctor for that reason. But it sounds like if they come to you, that they don't have to fear a radical prostate surgery, that they can, you have other solutions that will usually take care of this problem.
You're absolutely correct. In fact, I discourage, even though I'm a urologist, I discourage radical prostatectomy. And the principal reason that I discourage it is that if we actually ever come out with a vaccine, and we're working on a vaccine, if you've had your prostate removed, we have no antigenic stimulus for the immune system to be targeted to. So I oftentimes tell people to take that under consideration before you have your prostate removed. Having your prostate removed is problematic for a lot of reasons, but the principal reason among them is that I don't care what procedure we do, there's failure. In fact, regardless of how men are treated with prostate cancer, definitively, 40 to 60% of those men fail by 7 to 10 years.
Does that, you're working on a vaccine, does that mean it's viral?
Well, we don't know that it's viral. Prostate cancer is a confusing disease. We do know that genetically there's switches that are upregulated or downregulated at different times, and those actions basically cause cells to act differently, act abnormally, become atypical, those cells to become, example. So there's a lot of...
Something cut out. What did you say?
Yeah, I was just talking about cells and becoming aggressive, independent of different things that we do. So cancers, we don't really have a handle on why cancers actually take place. There's multiple factors, and we could run the gamut of factors from environment to, what you eat, what you breathe, what your family history was, on and on and on and on.
What is the feedback from your peers?
What do I hear from my peers?
I mean, a lot of times when somebody's successful, the other people battle them or call them heretics. How are your peers about your approach?
I don't hear a whole lot of chatter. People tell me that I'm the urologist of the stars. Alluding to the fact that they only think that people that can afford to see me can see me. That's absolutely not true. I think they respect what I do. I'm absolutely outcome data driven. So it's really how people do that matters most to me, and that's how my success is defined. I think in the bigger picture, I can validate all that I do. So because I can validate it, you really can't get a lot of criticism. People are envious of me, I'm sure, because of our scanner and its great capabilities. But on the other hand, we all have choices in this world. And I'd rather be deeply in debt, which I am, and help people and feel good about it. And ultimately, I'll get out of debt. I'll figure out a way. But, I'm writing a book as example.
I was about to ask you about that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the book is called Men at Risk, A Rush to Judgment, and it's really an expert's guide to the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of prostate cancer. And, it's exciting to write a book. It's extremely cutting edge, figuratively. I'm excited about it because it tells people about the diet. I've got a little bit of humor to me, so there are times when I lighten it up a bit. But on the other hand, I really have a message to give, and I want people to study this book, and if they study it, I think that all men can be a lot better off and can avoid some of the sinister diseases that we face as we grow older. It's a book that I think it's going to change medicine. I believe that I'm going to get a lot of people in a lot of different sectors talking about it.
What about... insurance companies, does insurance cover the way you treat?
Another great question. Insurance companies always pay something on what we do. As an example, with our MRIS scanner, we have insurance companies, depending on your policy, that pay 100%. So, it's not that my fees here are overly expensive. I think what happens is that because I am a boutique practice, I have an opportunity to basically take that individual that I meet and study that individual very, very carefully such that I can come out with, in a very short period of time, a very appropriate plan for that individual so that that person can, one, improve upon the disease that he has. And most men that I see have some illness, and the most common one being prostatitis. And frequently, some men have a very bad disease like prostate cancer and are very difficult to help, like that 44-year-old fella that had a PSA of 36.
That's just amazing. I can't get over that. Do the insurance companies support you doing prevention work?
You know, that again, you're hitting on topics that are very, very near and dear to me. We're just starting to go through those doors where we're talking to insurance companies about prevention. And there's a couple of groups nationally that deal with prevention, and I'm excited about that because with male health, prevention is truly, it's probably the single most important topic to me because I know that we can prevent this disease. It's just changing a culture, changing the paradigm in our culture to get people to be proactive as opposed to reactive.
What could the public do to help support that?
Well, obviously funding would be a home run. We need funding to do our studies. We're trying to be creative with how we fund a study. But this prostate cancer prevention trial, which we call the PROCAP trial, prostate cancer prevention is what that stands for, trial, that's intended to prove unequivocally that we can prevent prostate cancer. There's zero doubt about that. It's just that we've got to do that study so that we can really change the health of the entire world. So it's just not America that we're concentrating on. It's the entire world. The whole world has problems with prostate cancer. In excess of 600,000 men are diagnosed with prostate cancer every year around the world.
We've got a couple of minutes left, and I want to give you time to talk about whatever you want to talk about that I haven't asked you yet. Is there anything there?
Well,
put you on the spot here. Make you think quickly.
Yeah, it's always easier for me to answer a question, I think. But nonetheless, I think that people, if you're looking for a coach, I'm your man. Men need to meet people that are knowledgeable on a topic and can actually take the topic from A to Z. And in that regard, I'm obviously a humanist. I wouldn't want to do for somebody what I wouldn't want to have done for myself. So I use that as a guide. I don't have two standards. There's only one standard, and that's the right standard or the correct standard. And given that, we do consultations, free consultations, once a week, and we have an opportunity to visit with people from around the world on that consultation call. I give away my time. So I'm really trying to help people figure out what it is that they need to do for free. And I actually love doing that because I don't think it's about people coming to see me or me being basically holding people hostage to come and see me because of talents that I have. I would just as soon give those talents away and allow people to learn about the things they need to know and avoid seeing me if the numbers cooperate and their disease resolves.
Yeah, it'll come back. It'll come back in a prevention practice.
Absolutely.
Come away, but the prevention practice will be.
You know, when I see the smiles on people's faces, and I get emails from people, and I get people sending me a bottle of wine here and there. I love red wine, Cabernet typically, but people send me these things and just say, you know, Dr. Wheeler, thank you so much. You know, I'm truly on the cutting edge of treatments. I do high intensity. Focused ultrasound, which is a procedure done outside of the country, in places like Canada and Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and the Bahamas.
Wasn't that what you were going to do on my friend?
Yes.
Did you do that?
We haven't done that yet, and part of the reason is there's a size requirement for the prostate. If the prostate is too big, we have to put that off. But really, if we're talking about a male with a diseased prostate and a PSA of any number greater than one, that individual has decisions to make, and obviously the higher the number, so long as it doesn't get above 10, I consider those individuals very, very appropriate candidates for a procedure to get rid of the prostate as they know it. I've treated multiple doctors who have had problems, who have sought my advice and expertise regarding resolution of their own individual problems, and the high-intensity focused ultrasound is, again, a great way to ameliorate those problems and enable these people to get back to a healthy lifestyle. We protect sexual function, and nobody's incontinent from that procedure. And the procedure, in most cases, is extremely successful.
And you don't do that here in Florida, do you?
You can't do it in Florida, but we will do it in Florida, probably starting in the year 2010 or 2011.
Why is that?
I'm one of three urologists in the country with the most experience with the high-intensity focused ultrasound procedure. No, they don't allow it here in this country yet. They're finishing up the FDA Phase 3 trials, and once those trial results are known, the FDA will make a decision as to whether they want to allow it or not. From my perspective, there's probably another very important, exciting treatment coming down the road, and this is something we haven't had a chance to talk about, but it's IRE, or irreversible electroporation. And essentially what that means, and it sounds like it's a long word or a tongue twister, but really what it is, it's about actually electrocuting cells or delivering to cells a small or a low voltage of energy that actually allows those cells to develop a hole within the cell, if you will. And with that hole, once it's open, it's irreparable. It doesn't repair itself. It can't repair itself, and it dies. And what's neat about that is,
You got about a minute.
About a minute?
I don't want you to get cut off in the middle.
That's okay. The exciting thing about this is it appears to have fewer side effects than even the high-intensity focused ultrasound has.
Mm-hmm. Is that based on Rife's work, by any chance?
On whose work?
Rife. Like
no, it's not like the Rife machine you're talking about?
Yeah, I know it's not that kind of machine, but is it that kind of technology?
Well, I don't really know enough about the Rife machine to speak intelligently about it, except that I'm not certain it works.
Mm-hmm.
But this one works. I've seen it work in rat models, and so I'm excited about it.
All right. We're going to have to go, but I want you to quickly tell your website again so people can find you.
Website is www.MRISUSA.com, and I have a toll-free number, 877-766-8400.
And it's Dr. Ronald Wheeler, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Good deal. Thank you so much for coming on my show.
I loved it, and I'd look forward to another opportunity.
Would love to do it, especially when your book comes out.
All right, thank you.
Take care, and good night.
All right, good night.